The number one resolution for people last year was to save more money, but nearly half gave up by February. Don't let that be you. Download Rocket Money to reach your financial goals this year. Track your spending, cut waste, and automate savings in one simple app. Rocket Money shows you all your expenses and categorizes them so you know exactly where your money's going and where you're overspending. From there, the app cuts waste by canceling your unused subscriptions and lowering your bills. No customer service needed. With that money freed up, the app will automatically set some cash aside for your goals, whether it's an emergency fund, paying off debt, or saving for vacation. Rocket Money's got you covered. Users love the app with over 186,000 five-star ratings. And on average, users can save up to $740 a year when using all of the app's premium features. Make saving money a priority this year. Go to rocketmoney.com/cancel to get started. That's rocketmoney.com/cancel. rocketmoney.com/cancel.
Hello and welcome to this week's edition of the Squawker Talker podcast. And with the international break keeping us or forcing us to keep away from the day-to-day business of domestic matters, here on the Talker, we are taking a slightly different format this week. Yes, indeed, as we are looking at the standout stars so far from the first 2 months of the Premier League season. And on the back of that, we'll be asking the all-important question: who is the best player in each position right now in the Premier League? And just like our FIFA Pro World 11 podcast last week, this is going to be a debate. It's going to be a battle, but with maybe a little bit of room for compromise. Right then, plenty to get through. My name's Fergal Brennan. And whilst Jurgen Klopp and Pep Guardiola and all the rest of them have scrambled luxury jets to fly their Samba stars back from Brazil, Squawker's own man on South American duty last night has had himself a slightly less glamorous 24 hours. It's Mohamed Butt. Mo, how are you doing this morning?
Yeah, I'm all right. It's a bit tired, you know. It's all right. It was fun. For once, Brazil were fun. Rafinha scored twice. It was great.
No private jet?
Yeah, unfortunately, no. You know, I've got a private sofa. It's pretty good, though.
Not everything can be as glamorous as that, Mo. And joining Mo, we have a Squawker Talker podcast debutant, freelance football broadcaster Tom Gale. Tom, how's things?
Yeah, all good. I've been self-indulged with the Irish CR7 for the past few days. I've been covering the Republic, both in their international breaks, and I'm off to West Brom later this evening. So yeah, I'm all about the Irish CR7.
Wonderful stuff. Great stuff. Right. We're going to get stuck into this 11. Now, just like the FIFA Pro podcast last week, we do have to get some ground rules set out. So this podcast and this 11 is based around a brilliant written piece that Mo has done this week. He's put in the hard yards, not just on South American duty, but in the Premier League as well. So the rules are the 11 is based around this season. So the cutoff date was the start of the season, right the way up until today. 7 games on the board in the Premier League so far, or 8, depending on where you're watching it or listening to this podcast this weekend. So those are the rules, and it's based around form since the start of the 2021-2022 campaign. Right, so that's the boring stuff out of the way. Let's get into the fun stuff. So Mo, you're going to have to justify your choices. I'm sure you've got stacks of reasons for why you've gone for these 11. So we're going to get ourselves kicked off with goalkeeper. Always a difficult call, but you've got a pretty solid shout here. Give us your goalkeeper.
Yeah. So, first thing though, all club performances are being considered. So, European stuff as well. But Premier League is being primarily focused on. That's got the stronger weighting, shall we say. And so, my Premier League pick is Edouard Mendy. I mean, what more do you want? Like, he's incredible. Remember when City played Chelsea, at the Bridge? And you're thinking, and City were just miles better than Chelsea. Just absolutely walked all over Chelsea, and they only won 1-0, and it was a deflected shot. Why then win 1-0? Because Edouard Mendy was lights out. He's conceded 3 goals, which is the joint least, in the Premier League, which is the same with Edison. But Mendy has done it with Chelsea not looking as imperious as Liverpool did. City have been looking ridiculous, really, really good. Chelsea have had not a spluttering start to the campaign, but they've looked good, but they haven't been in full flight. They haven't had Kante for a bunch of their games. And so without Kante, of course, we know the Chelsea system falls apart. Mendy's been holding it together. Again, just I'm focusing on the City game in primary, even though they lost that game, that game sort of showed how great Mendy is, even though it was a defeat, because he kept it to 1-0. And it was a lucky one. It was a deflected goal. He turned and shot Gabriel Jesus, did very well to shoot, got the shot off, nicely done. But it was a deflected shot. That's the only thing that beat him in that game. He was incredible. And he's been incredible all season. And I think he's the stability he's transmitted to Chelsea since he joined has been really impressive. He was great in the Super Cup. He's been great in everything. So, yeah, for me, it's got to be Mendy.
Tom, when you look at the numbers in terms of Alisson and Edison for the last three seasons, it's generally been a bit of a trade-off between them two for the Golden Glove in terms of clean sheets. And they've kind of created a new level. We just talk about the best goalkeeper in the Premier League conversation. It tends to always be them. Mendy has crashed this party, not just so far this season, but the back end of last season, winning the Champions League. As Mo said, he's announced himself as he's as good as these. And based on his early season form, he deserves to be right up there. He has missed one game, so he's only played six, whereas the other two have played seven. And three clean sheets on the back of that mean that, you know, he'll probably catch up and he'll probably be on par with them in the next few weeks. Would you agree with Mo that based on the first 2 months of the season, it is Mendy that's leading the way and not the two Brazilians?
Yeah, without a doubt. It's a bit of a no-brainer. And I think you've referenced the timescale there coming in last January. You know, all players take time to get up to speed, don't they? But he's just fitted in like a glove. There's a bit of, you do feel a bit of sympathy for Frank Lampard if maybe what would have happened if he got that goalkeeper in sooner. But then the added context as well is when Kepa Arrizabalaga has had his chances, he's performed well as well, hasn't he? So I'm not saying Mendy's using that, but he perhaps knows now at the moment, should he fall short of those exceptionally high standards that Kepa is proving to be at least an adequate replacement? For a long time, that was a complete write-off. He was, it's my jersey, mine jersey, no one's going to take it off me. But yeah, it's always difficult with goalkeepers because I suppose stats in terms of how many shots they face when Chelsea are largely going to win most of their games. But the fact he saved 86% of his shots this season, yeah, numbers don't lie. And he, if I was to choose my number one, I'd definitely agree with that.
Yeah, and just to add a couple more numbers on that before we go on to Mo's back four, Mendy really is top of the shop in some of the deeper numbers. When we look at the XG relating to goalkeepers, post-shot expected goals, he's top in the Premier League just ahead of Edison, and he's also top for post-shot expected goals based on shots on target. Edouard Mendy, the Chelsea wall. Right, moving on to the defence, Mo, I'm going to throw it back over to you. Right back, left back, centre back, take it away.
Before I do that, quick shout out to Edison, who did make probably one of the passes of the season to Phil Foden at Anfield, and he's a goalkeeper, so, you know, respect. But right back, speaking of Anfield, right back, come on, there's only one, guys, Trent Alexander-Arnold. I don't care what anyone says, I know we would like to rag on him for his not less than stellar defending and whatever, but he's brilliant. Come on. He's absolutely brilliant. After a down year last year where he didn't look like himself, didn't really look, like he was at the races. He's come back this year like a house on fire. He's been absolutely sensational. The passes, the assists, the crosses. He looks back to himself. If Sadio Mane could finish, he'd already have like a good like three or four or five assists. You know, as it is, he has, he's just absolutely incredible. The big chances, only one player's created more big chances than he has this season. Just his overall play is sensational. What Trent gives to Liverpool, right, is this incredible sort of creativity front back. Everyone's like, oh, midfielder. Gareth Southgate even played him in midfield for England. It went horribly because what he gives the side is not something you want from a midfielder. Is that he moves, first off, he starts in a deeper area, comes into midfield, which means he's harder to pick up. Wingers don't tend to follow him into midfield. When he gets into midfield, or when he gets into the half space or in the wide right area, it just means the delivery, the quality of his final ball, his final pass is just so high. It gets Liverpool's attacking players into attacking positions where faster and more in better position than others. Even the spin on his passes is so that they can take one touch and kill it, or not even take a touch sometimes. You know, how many first-time shots do you see off Alexander-Arnold's crosses and passes? It's just incredible. There's almost nothing I can say he can do better in an attacking sense. Yeah, he could be a better defender, but when you're an attacking force like he is, your team can cover for you defensively. Dani Alves was a decent 1v1 defender, but positionally would always get caught out. But no one was like, oh, Dani Alves is rubbish. Because they were like, well, he's an offensive force of nature. He's in a, you know, he makes that attack almost. So, yeah, you let him get away with occasionally being a bit rubbish in defence. So the same with Trent. And Liverpool know this because they have Jordan Henderson coming behind him to cover. Even Mohamed Salah, I was tracking back to cover him because they know that Trent is not the key to their team, but like if you're putting those names on those team sheets, Salah is the first name, Van Dijk is the second name, Alisson's the third name, Trent's probably fourth, maybe even third ahead of Alisson, frankly. If you look at how important he is to their attacking structure, without him, they look lost.
Okay, right back is the call for Trent Alexander-Arnold. Tom, I've got a feeling, based on you kind of nodding along, would you agree, Trent, bit of a shoe-in at right back?
Yeah, I don't think we can go as far as to say it's Trent 2.0, but I think psychologically, we all had that drama about, is he in the England team? Then he unfortunately, when he was, and then he had that in disappointment, so he missed the Euros, full stop. So I think he is just going to be growing and maturing as a player. Yes, again, as Mo's rightfully pointed out, the question marks at times defensively, but he is the modern day wing back, isn't he, as regards to what he offers. Clearly compensates going forward in terms of when you've got Virgil van Dijk back there in defence, Alisson as well. So yeah, completely agree with that.
Okay, let's look at the rest of the defence. Left back and centre back. Mo, go ahead.
Right, left back. It's a tricky one because there have been some good left backs this season, but the best left back so far this season, for my money, has been a right back. Because look, Marco Correa has been incredible for Brighton. He's been absolutely sensational. By the way, Barcelona sold him for €6 million and bought Junior Firpo for €30 million. If you want an idea about how stupid Barcelona were with money, Cucurella is really, really good. I like Cucurella, value him a lot. He's really good. Luke Shaw, obviously Luke Shaw. Tyrone Mitchell's doing well at Palace. And then Aaron Cresswell, obviously, has been great at West Ham since Moyes went there. But for me, it's João Cancelo. It's João Cancelo because it's hard to explain what he does because he's not a traditional left back. He doesn't get down on the outside, doesn't whip in crosses, but he's just basically like having another midfielder on the pitch. He's so good on the ball. Like, forget the fact that his skill, he obviously has skill and dribbling skills and has pace and power and can run up and down and and he can put crosses in as well. It's just the tactical intelligence he has to play that midfield role. Because if you watched him before at Valencia, at Juventus, you thought this guy is an up and down wing back start, right? Like a classic right back, wing back, not really suited to play Guardiola style of football. And it took him a year sitting around on the bench, but now it's sort of clicked in his head and he's just on a different level. I mean, if it wasn't the fact that they don't actually have another viable left back, I'm sure he would play more right back and Walker, and they wouldn't have to play Walker so much, but they don't really have a left back. So they play Cancelo there and he does it excellently. He was amazing at Anfield until he slipped twice defensively for Mohamed Salah score two wonder goals. But, well, sorry, Sadio Mane and Mohamed Salah score wonder goals. But other than that, he's been incredible. The way he helps City in build up. His pressing is great. His distribution is great. He moves the ball around like he's a midfielder. He finds key passes. He finds his wingers always in great position, especially now they're playing Phil Foden wide left. And that's the interesting balance, right? Because typically what we've seen in modern football is a right-footed left winger cutting infield and then a left-footed left back running around on the overlap, providing the width, right? That's the classic inverted forward thing that we've seen. But City have almost reversed it, where now they've got this right-footed left-back cutting in field and basically being a midfielder, allowing their midfielder, who is Kevin De Bruyne, let's say, to bomb on into attacking midfield and basically just play there. And then their left-winger is just someone like, sometimes it's been Grealish, but sometimes it's Foden, who actually is just a winger and stays wide left and hugs the touchline and provides width down there and then cuts in field sometimes when he has to. As again, we saw at Anfield, makes dangerous opportunities. So the tactical possibilities that Cancelo gives City, as well as the sheer level of football he's been playing, just outrageous. So for me, it's Cancelo.
Tom, obviously Man City, first entrance in it. We've had Mendy with Chelsea and Trent with Liverpool. Are you going with Cancelo for left-back or have you got a different call?
No, I think it's hard to disagree with a lot of what Mo's said and it's going to get a bit predictable here, but I think he epitomises that Guardiola ethos in terms of versatility of players because, yes, they come in as this is my position, but Pep clearly has his remit as regards to this is what I need to you, and Cancelo is a great example of someone who's embraced that and relished the challenge and thinking, if I'm going to be playing week in, week out, I'm going to be the best left-back that I can be. So I think there's certainly, you know, from an English bias, I'm certainly more than impressed with Luke Shaw. I know that United defence is not as assured as when we're looking at Manchester City's defence, and I think that always has to be the context, doesn't it, as regards to the players they're playing alongside. But equally, as we all lauding Trent for going forward, I think Luke Shaw continues to demonstrate what a great offensive weapon he is. But I think, yeah, I wouldn't disagree with the choice of Cancelo.
This is going to be the first disagreement. I'm going to disagree, and I'm going to go with Marcus Alonso. I think based on this season so far, I think there's two things for me that get Marcus Alonso in the team, and one of them involves Joao Cancelo. First of all, he's keeping Ben Chilwell out of the team. England international, big money signing for Chelsea, but Tuchel has gone with Alonso for the bulk of his game so far this season. And the Liverpool game for Chelsea and the Liverpool game for City are actually quite telling. Mo pointed out that the two goals for Liverpool came down that side. I'm not saying Cancelo is directly at fault, but defensively in those one-on-one situations against a world-class operator like Salah, he got shown up. Whereas conversely, you look at the Liverpool against Chelsea game, man sent off, Reece James just before the break. That was the first goal that Chelsea have conceded this season. I think it's the only Premier League goal that Chelsea have conceded with Alonso in the team. And the second half performance, when it was backs to the wall and you needed your left back to be a left back, Alonso really stepped up. So I'm going with Alonso over Cancelo, but only just. Going on to centre-backs, I'm kind of laughing to myself because I knew 100% who Mo was going to pick for centre-back. I'm not surprised in the slightest. And I'm going to say right now, I don't disagree, but I know that Mo has already got a big speech prepared for his centre-back pitch. So I'm going to pass it back to you, Mo.
Before I get into eulogising my centre-back, and believe me, I will. Yeah, Marcus Alonso is a really good shout for left-back. I hadn't really considered it. And the Liverpool game is a great example because I've always thought the big weakness of him was the fact that he isn't a great defender and you have to play him in a 3-5-2 and this and that. But yeah, you're right. He was very good at Anfield defending when Chelsea were trying to hold on to that lead, or that draw, rather, I should say. So yeah, that's not a bad shout. I mean, it's interesting, really, because left-back is a much stronger position overall in the Premier League. Like, I wouldn't say there's any right back anywhere near Trent, whereas there's a bunch of left backs who I think have been very good. But yeah, for me, the right back is just different standard. But the right, left back, yeah, Alonso's been very good, sorry. Yeah, but anyway, centre back. Okay, here we go. Right. Okay. There's only one defender in the Premier League who is the physical embodiment of the Mike Tyson left jab, overhand, right combination, right? Think about it. Cast your mind back, or go on YouTube if you're too young. Watch Mike Tyson, right? Jab left, overhand right. Jab left, overhand right. Or Mike Tyson's uppercut, right? Look at it. It's pure violence. It's absolutely devastating. Simplistic violence. It's not complicated, but it's brilliant. Technically excellent. Executed to the perfect microsecond. Absolutely perfect. Lands beautifully. Takes everyone out, right? What defender in the Premier League reminds you of that level of violence? There's only one guy, right? It's Antonio Rudiger. There's no one else in the Premier League who operates at that kind of an obscene level of utter precision violence. It's not indiscriminate. He's not Lee Catamol running around sticking his studs into people's thighs and kicking people in the back of their Achilles. He's targeted aggression and targeted violence to the degree where teams just get afraid to attack Chelsea and afraid to run him. Or when they run at him, it just becomes such a futile exercise because he's so intelligent and athletic. It's a weird combination that he has this awesome athleticism, this awesome aggression, but he plays with such calm in his, like, he's so, as ice in his veins. Like, with some aggressive defenders, you get the sense they're running around like kind of like headless chickens, trying to get into tackles and show how great they are and strong they are. You never, with Rudiger, it's like he's like a 6'4" version of Ricardo Carvalho. If you remember Ricardo Carvalho, he would hack someone to pieces, but like looked like he like had no like no felt no emotion doing it. Didn't enjoy it, didn't hate it, just was like, yep, all right, get up now. Come on, moving on. Right, like Ramos, Sergio Ramos gets involved in it. He loves the violence. He's like, yeah, come on. Gets everyone G'd up. Carvalho just ice cold, bang, you're down now. I'm gonna get back into position. Rudiger's the same, except Rudiger's bigger, stronger, and faster. Honestly, I watch him defend and I'm just like, how does anyone ever get by him? His only weakness is passing. And he's a defender, so that's not even that big of a weakness. The only weakness is that he can tempt him into making silly passes every now and again. He's so good defensively. He's the baddest man alive, man. I'd be terrified to try and even dribble at him, let alone like tackle him or take the ball past him.
Tom, Mo makes a hell of a case for Rudiger. I don't know whether you're kind of too afraid to disagree with him or whether you do agree with him. But if you do, if you don't, I also wanted to ask you, where does Rudiger sit now in terms of, we talked about Alisson and Edison and how Mendes kind of crashed that party. It's been a one-horse race for a number of seasons with Virgil van Dijk. Obviously, Ruben Diaz last season cleaned up in terms of individual awards. how strongly is Rudiger in that conversation now as one of the best Premier League centre-backs, if not the best?
I think, as Mo's perfectly articulated there, he's in the conversation, because I think for large parts of his Chelsea career, we were maybe thinking, is this working out? But obviously the key has been Tuchel bringing him into the side, and you know, we are seeing the very best of him. But we already mentioned the name. This is the one where I choose to disagree with. It's Ruben Dias for me in terms of Premier League defender. And I think that's maybe in terms of, you can't argue with Rudiger right now, because obviously this is what this podcast is about, first seven games. But if, again, if we're looking at breadth of work, he was the standout defender of last season, and he hasn't really done much wrong this season, to be honest with you. City have obviously been involved in a few very competitive games, but pretty sure they've had the fewest shots on target. And he, you know, I hate to anglicise this, but we do see him as that stereotypical English defender, a bit as Mo talked about with Rudiger, no nonsense. And anyone who's watched him live in person when he was behind closed doors as well, he's got the English vocabulary straight off the training ground. He's not afraid to drop a few F-bombs in regards to mastery in his defence. So for me personally, I'd always go Ruben Dias in this instance.
Yeah, I like Ruben Dias a lot. What he brings to City is this sort of sense of calm, because he's always concentrating. And that was what Jose Fonseca said about him. His concentration is great. His communication, like you say, it's fantastic. It can be agricultural communication at times, but he's always communicating to his defenders, making sure they all know where they are. And that's why City was so good last year defensively, because for the first time since Kompany left, they had someone who would organise the defence, the whole back line. Laporte is an amazing defender. I don't know that he's much of an organiser. John Stones, we know, is not an organiser, which is why obviously he was great next to Laporte, which is why he's been great next to Kompany, and he was great next to Harry Maguire playing for England. But next to Laporte, there's kind of like no one's talking there. No one's really vocal. Ruben Dias is vocal. But for me, the reason I put Rudiger topper over Ruben Dias, I mean, frankly, Ruben, you couldn't really go wrong with either, frankly. I mean, there's also Joel Matip. He's had a very good start to the season in Liverpool, probably looking better than Van Dijk right now. Rafael Varane's been very good for Man United. RIP Man United, by the way. But with Varane and Maguire injured, I don't know what they're going to do with their upcoming fixtures. Shane Duffy's been very good. So Gabriel, I thought Gabriel's return to Arsenal has sort of heralded a bit of stability at the back as well. So there have been some good centre-backs. But for me, I think Ruben Dias is a great shout. But then also, Rudiger. The reason I put Rudiger top is because, with the exception of Kante, who obviously sets the tone immensely for the way that Chelsea play, no one sets the tone more than Rudiger, even more than Cesar Azpilicueta, because it's this sort of sense of, you want to dare attack us? Come on, I dare you to attack us. And that sort of intensity and almost terror, you know, to induce fear to even attack teams, I think that's such a big part of what Chelsea do in terms of their defensive organisation, because it makes teams just afraid to even really come at them and commit too many bodies. Because obviously there are ways to score against Chelsea. No one is invincible. But because Rudiger operates such a massive level of intimidation, and so does Azpilicueta to a degree, but not quite the same. Like, again, look at City in the Champions League final last year. I know we're looking at this season, but it's just a very good example of De Bruyne was like City's best player. They tried to get him into the game. Every time he got anywhere near the box, De Bruyne, Rudiger would come and clatter him, take him out. In one case, literally taking him out, accidentally, of course, but, well, accidentally. You know, taking De Bruyne out of the game completely, and that completely killed City. So, you know, that's why I would give Rudiger just a slight edge, but I do think Ruben Dias has been great as well.
Right, we're going to move on to midfield. And Mo, you've shown yourself to be a real live-by-the-sword, die-by-the-sword style manager, 2021's version of Kevin Keegan, because you've gone for a back three and a very ambitious diamond of sorts. So we've got a defensive midfielder, two midfielders, an attacking midfielder, and then a front three. So your defensive midfielder, we're going to go with him first. If this team was ever to be bought by Mo FC, this individual would have a hell of a lot of work to do. So with that in mind, give us your defensive midfielder.
I need to be clear, this was never meant to actually be a team. It just happened to accidentally become an 11 because I couldn't decide between the two central midfielders. I had to pick both of them. So it was actually just meant to be every position. But it is functionally an 11, but it would never work as an 11 because, you can't put Trent in the back three. That's basically why it would never work as 11. But otherwise, it maybe could work. I don't know. Anyway, it's not meant to be an 11, but it kind of accidentally is because I'm indecisive with the central midfielders. But defensive midfield, it's I don't know. This might be controversial, I think, because obviously there have been good defensive midfield performances. But for me, I'm going with Declan Rice because he's just been... Well, first of all, Kante has been injured. right? That's the first thing. I know he's not strict defensive midfielder, but he's been injured, right? That's obviously takes the first big name off the table. And so to me, that's opened up a sort of power vacuum for the Premier League. And Rice, I think, has been, if he's filled it, he's been excellent. I know West Ham are ninth, but Rice has been excellent throughout. And he was really good in the Europa League as well, which again, we're not waiting as heavily, but we are waiting. And he's been really, really good, scored some good goals in the Europa League. And just, he's showing a level to his game now, which is sort of, he's really maturing and really taking on responsibility and growing as a defender. Obviously, he was linked with Man United in the summer and linked with Chelsea. Big fees, right? And you're thinking, he's not worth that kind of money. Easy now, easy. But, you know, the way he's playing now, I mean, he's still probably not going to be worth 80 million euros, 8 million pounds. But he's getting closer to the point where now you can almost say, I can see why you'd pay that kind of money for him. He's not worth it yet, but like with Maguire, when United bought Maguire, you're thinking, that's a really dumb idea based on what we've seen. But on what he could give United, okay, fair enough. I see what you're going there. It's a risk, but I see what you're trying to do there. Same thing with Rice. If he keeps playing this way, because remember, he's not just being defensive. He is being a defensive midfielder, but in a two especially, which most teams play two, not a single defensive midfielder, which is the ironic thing. I picked to pick one defensive midfielder. He can't play a defensive midfield by himself, as we saw for England. But, you know, in terms of a two, you want a defensive midfielder who can tackle, who can be aggressive, who can be energetic, who can drive the ball forward with his feet. Declan Rice, man, he's doing the business. The long grain Lampard, the Basmati Busquets, the Pilau Pirlo. Come on.
Again, another strong selling point. It's like Rudiger all over again. Tom, can you argue with that? Would you stick with Rice or have you got a different call?
Yeah, I fully agree with this one. And I'm glad that Mo's highlighted it because I think certainly everyone, I think, rightfully had a question marks, 80 million to Chelsea or whatever. But he's someone, again, we talked about the maturity of Mendy. He's just embraced that, hasn't he? He had a great Euros and he's continued where he's left off domestically. I think he's got a brilliant manager for him at the right time at the moment in David Moyes because he's always quick to acknowledge his strengths, but also pointing out, you know, keeping on that leash as regards to, well, he still can be better. Clearly, goal scoring is something he can look to add, but anyone who saw that performance in the Europa League where he literally dragged his side, captained him, scored a great goal as well. And that's another thing, just his maturity. He's always doing it post-match interviews. And I know you can read too much into that, but he clearly wants responsibility. He's growing into this stature. There's the heavy English tax as regards to when he does get sold, how much it'll be. But he's proving so far with all this spotlight and attention on him, he's more than capable of holding his own.
I'm going to disagree and I'm going to throw in a disclaimer here. This is nothing to do with myself and Mr. Rice's tenuous relationship. I'm going with Rodri and I'm going with Rodri for the reasons that Mo said about Declan Rice, which is that he can't or is maybe not trusted either by David Moyes or Gareth Southgate to play as a lone pivot. Calvin Phillips does that job very, very effectively for Leeds. He's able and adaptable to change his role when he plays for England. Why I would go with Rodri is City and Pep Guardiola are one of the biggest proponents of this idea of two eights, two progressive, attack-minded or forward-focused midfielders either side of a lone pivot. If you're doing that job in a Pep Guardiola system, you can't have people like Mo or anyone else saying X can't play defensive midfield on their own. And Rodri is doing that. And I think there's been so many stars at Manchester City over the years and someone that consistently goes under the radar is Fernandinho. And you cannot underestimate how big a job replacing Fernandinho in that City team is. And Rodri, slowly but surely, I had a couple of question marks over him when he first came in from Atletico Madrid, slowly but surely is doing that. And when you take such a massive piece of the jigsaw out like Fernandinho, you need a ready-made replacement. And Rodri, for my money, is well on track to do that. So I would just edge him out over Declan Rice in my call. But it's two votes for Rice, so Rice wins that one. Congratulations, Declan. Right, moving on to the rest of the midfield. Mo, heavy Manchester United influence, as expected. Give us the rest of your midfield.
First of all, Rodri is a great shout. Just to clear up, that is a great shout. And I did feel really bad not putting Rodri in, but I didn't want everyone to just go, Mo picking the Pep player again. Roll eyes, what a surprise. But Rodri is great. I'm a big fan of Rodri. No, with midfield, this is what turned it into an 11 accidentally, right? I couldn't decide which of these two players to get, right? Because they've both got very different points in their favour. So the first central midfielder is Bernardo Silva, which if you've watched City play so far this season, you know why it's Bernardo Silva, particularly if you watched them play at Stamford Bridge and at Anfield, where he put in essentially two flawless performances. Just Like we were, everyone was speculating with the arrival of Jack Grealish that Bernardo Silva was looking to leave in the summer. That was the rumor. Oh, he's looking to leave. He's not happy. He's not going to get minutes. And we were thinking, yeah, that makes sense. You know, Riyad Mahrez is more of a winger. Raheem Sterling is more of a winger. Where does Bernardo Silva fit in now that they've got Jack Grealish? Yeah, fair enough. Then where he fits in is in midfield. You know, last season, Ilkay Gundogan was there, was one of their major players. He's been injured. Not a problem. Bernardo Silva stepped in. Bernardo Silva has been better than almost, than as a footballing presence, he's been better than any central midfielder in the Premier League so far this season. Unquestionable. His influence on those two games, the City game and the Liverpool game and the Chelsea game, outrageous. He presses phenomenally. He passes phenomenally. He tackles, gets stuck in. He dribbles the ball. Did you see that dribble he had against Liverpool where he ran through like 3-4 players and played that pass to Foden, and Foden really should have scored? I mean, this guy is outrageous on a completely different level for me. As an overall player, he's just been phenomenal to watch. He's been absolutely brilliant. This is the kind of midfield playmaker that the Premier League desperately needs more of. This is like, everyone's like, oh, he's going to be David Silva. This is David Silva. This is what David Silva used to do when he was in his pomp. He's Bernardo Silva's doing it at an even higher level because he's doing it in a more compact, against more compact defences that are hell-bent on stopping City. David Silva did it right at the start of Guardiola's reign at City, and where it would, teams were like, are they really much cop this City lot? And then they were getting steamrolled and like, oh no, they are very good. You know, so Bernardo Silva has been incredible. But at the same time, Paul Pogba has 7 assists in 7 games. So I can't not have Paul Pogba in this team. And you look at them as well, and they've all been bloody great assists as well. There've been some outrageous passes. His assist for Mason Greenwood in particular. Just go look it up, man. This pass that shouldn't, like, it's physically shouldn't be like possible to do that and make it look that easy. That should look like it's taken every strain of every sinew and every muscle in your body to pull it off. And he's just like, bing, just slapped it like it's nothing. He's phenomenally talented. We know he's not consistent. We know he has issues with consistency. He's not a great defensive player. We know this, but oh my goodness, 7 assists in 7 games. It was 7 in 5, I think. He's had a couple of barren ones with United playing a bit rubbish. But he's incredible. The deftness of his touch, the skill he has, the way he moves the ball, the way he manipulates the ball. It's a contract year for Pogba. He's up at the end of the year, so he's balling out and he's showing everyone, this is how good I am. Someone wants to make an offer, make me an offer. I can't refuse, you know?
Big game player Silva based on the last couple of weeks, Tom, and obviously assist king Paul Pogba, top of the assist charts in the Premier League so far this season. 2 strong candidates. Would you agree? Can you see anyone else nudging ahead of either of them?
Yeah, I think I can't disagree with regards to the justification for either of those, but I'm a big Abdoulaye Doucouré fan, to be honest with you. And I know we can talk about formation and where we're currently sitting in, but in terms of when he made that move for Watford, I think no one saw it as a surprise that he'd gone to, at the time, seen as a big 6, top 8 sort of side, really. And I think certainly this season, what we've seen so far under Rafa Benitez is essentially getting the best out of him, which is effectively box to box, isn't he? That he could do the down and dirty doggy stuff in terms of defensive. We know about his stature, his heading ability. But when that guy races forward, man, I think, is it 4 assists, 2 goals and whatnot? And in an Everton team that, let's be honest, is pretty average, he is standing heads and above in terms of me for central midfield from what I've seen by him.
Yeah, I can't argue with that. He's been great. He's on my short. He was on my honourable mentions. Pogba has 8 assists, not 7. It's even more impressive. Now, Doucouré's been great. I think he's been really, really good. Jorginho, I think, has been good for Chelsea. Shout out Jordan Henderson as well. I think he's been pretty good for Liverpool. He's back now, you know, the captain. But yeah, Doucouré is really interesting because obviously last season, and he said this, hasn't he? He says last season, the manager asked me to just babysit, James Rodriguez and play a sort of defensive role. So we didn't really see the best of him. We're thinking, it's not really all that good, is it? But this season under Benitez, he's been predictably unleashed to sort of run forward, you know, do the stuff he was doing at Watford. And we're seeing it now. He's been really, really good. And you wonder, you say the Everton team isn't that great, but like they've got... What I think they've got is they've got a lot of players who are just sort of perfect for Rafa Benitez. Does that make sense? Like,
they're very functional.
Damari Gray is another one. I mean, yeah, like Damari Gray is another one, just absolutely perfect to play for Rafa Benitez. So I think Everton are really interesting because watch out for them. That's all I'll say, because Rafa Benitez is much, 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 much better than everyone gives him credit for, because he got absolutely bodied by Fergie in that title race, like mind games and all that stuff. So everyone thinks he's a joke. He's really, really good. He's really, 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 really good as a coach. And he's adapted to modern football in a way that Jose Mourinho has not, right? So just watch out for Everton. And Doucouré is a great shout, definitely.
Yeah, I'm going to agree with Tom on Doucouré. Doucouré was my pick as well. I'm going for Pogba and Doucouré. And I think, as Tom mentions, it's so much of this is in relation to context and the context of Everton. Everton's midfield last year, as Mo, you pointed out, with James Rodriguez, he took up so much of the rest of the midfielders' time. They all had to do so much to accommodate him and what he couldn't or what he wouldn't do. And now we're starting to see what Abdoulaye Doucouré is all about, because Alan sits way more naturally. And Doucouré, when he is given that freedom in terms of being an engine to get forward, be creative in the final third, score goals, I think he's been absolutely fantastic. And Everton have been dying for a midfielder like that for, I would say personally, possibly even a decade. So fair play to Rafa for kind of unleashing that, and obviously to Doucouré for kicking on. Right, moving ahead, your number 10, Mo, the tip of your diamond, the tip of your sword. Manchester United have signed themselves a Portuguese superstar this summer, but there's only one Portuguese for you when it comes to United.
I mean, come on. Guys, he's the best player at Man United. He's been the best player in the Premier League since he signed for Man United, which is absurd to say, but it's true. 30 goals, 20 assists. Bruno Fernandes. Usually, I will say this, attacking midfielder is like a sort of classico between, like, a sort of nuclear arms between Bruno Fernandes and Kevin De Bruyne. They're absolutely all-out war. Who's better? And it's like, it almost changes on a week-to-week basis. But Kevin De Bruyne has not started this season in good form at all. Now, part of that, most of that, I would say, is because he's not fit. Because he obviously got injured in the Champions League final, played through injury in the Euros, and is not fully fit. You can see it when he plays. He's not there. So normally it's an arms between those two. This time, you know, one of them has been disarmed, you know. So it's Bruno on his own. There's no one even close to those two. And Bruno and De Bruyne is not on his level. So Bruno is just way out on his own. His influence over the way that Man United play football is unparalleled. When he plays well, Man United play well. When teams can mark him out of games, Man United struggle. They really struggle to create things. And obviously the signing of Jadon Sancho meant to alleviate that. But Sancho hasn't really kicked on just yet. He's still settling in. And part of that is, I think, because Rashford's not there. So Sancho's playing on the left. But really, he's hitting to play on the right. It's just complicated, right? And I think the signing of Cristiano Ronaldo kind of threw everything into whack. But yeah, Bruno, for me, just the influence he has. Forget anything else. Just look at the quality. I mean, the hat-trick against Leeds was fantastic, obviously. But you just look at the way he commands the ball. Is the go-to guy. Everyone, even Pogba, like, where's Bruno? Give him the ball. He'll make things happen. Obviously, he wastes the ball a lot. Well, wastes the ball a lot. Gives it away a lot because he tries things constantly to make things happen. And you know, if more clubs do what Villarreal did and just sit on Bruno, the way that they were able to shut Man United down in the Europa League final just by sitting on Bruno was so telling. And, you know, but United, what they had with Rio Fernandes, it's ridiculous because no one would have thought that. When they signed him, you're thinking, okay, he's stat padding in Portugal. If he was that good, he wouldn't be in Portugal. No one was thought this was going to happen. And he came in and not only was he great, but he's been genuinely electric and he's lifted the whole club in a way that no one has since maybe Van Persie and before that Cantona. Like, he's lifted the whole club more than anyone. You know, the whole club responds to him. He's already a United hero. Like, if he keeps up this performance over 4 or 5 years, he's going to be a United legend because they'll win some titles with him and he's going to be incredible. Yeah, I mean, come on. The joint most big chances created, joint most through balls attempted, all the stats are with him as well. But he's just outrageous. You just watch him, the eye test, man. Bruno Fernandes, what a player.
I suppose the biggest compliment, Tom, that we could maybe give Bruno is I'm looking at Mo's notes here before we started recording, and it just says, attacking midfield, Bruno Fernandes, honourable mentions, no one. Mo's kind of made this case that when you look at United, Sancho's come in, Ronaldo's come in, Pogba's on incredible form, Rashford is going to come back and hopefully just absolutely light up the Premier League. But you do get this sense with United that it is about Bruno. He is still the key in the door. It doesn't matter who they bring in to the football club. He is still the key man in that team.
Yeah, and crucially, Ole Gunnar Solskjaer knows that as well, doesn't he? Having covered Portugal during the Euros, it was always a case of Ronaldo's the big star and everyone else gets shoehorned in and around. And yes, there's a lot of drama and fanfare in and around Ronaldo, but Solskjaer sticks by his boy. He knows, but by and large, the best player for the team, as in goal scoring and helping others out, is Bruno Fernandes. So when Mo said, no, well, there's no one else comes close, it's going to be fascinating to see how he goes past all this Ronaldo fanfare. I think that's the thing, isn't it? Because we've seen the penalty, haven't we, as regards to why is Ronaldo not taking that? So it's a big test for him psychologically, but the numbers, what is it, 50 direct involvements in goals and 58 appearances in the Premier League, as Mo's rightfully talked about, in whatever, 10, 15 years when we're doing these best ever Premier League players, he's well on course to be arguably number one, given his impact at United. The only thing missing is silverware to boost his credentials, which at the moment you could say they're in a strong position to do, but certainly great start to the season.
Yeah, I agree. Yeah, three out of three. Absolutely no argument for me on Bruno Fernandes. Right, front three time, Mo. We've said it all the way through this. Your 11 is pretty attack focused. So now the money makers, the goal scorers, give it to us. Your front three, go for it.
Right wing, Mohamed Salah. I mean, you know, Rafinha's been very good. Very, very good. Obviously, scored for Brazil. Ismail Assar's been good. Mohamed Salah, come on. Wait, do I need to say anything else? Like, I don't really, do I? You watch him play, you're like, yeah, this guy is definitely a cut above. If there's one player playing better than Bruno Fernandes right now, it's Mohamed Salah. He's playing better than, I would argue, anyone except for Karim Benzema in Europe. Only the Frenchman is above Salah right now in terms of performance. Salah's amazing. He's outrageous. He's dribbling, he's scoring, he's assisting. He's tackling back. He's like in the right back area covering for Trent. You're thinking, oh my God, what is going on? Of course, then you remember that he's in a contract year. He wants to earn a new contract. That Liverpool wants to get paid a lot of money. And so he's like, you better look how good I am. You better pay me. You better pay me what I'm worth, boy. And he's so good. Liverpool fans are like, yeah, just pay him. Pay him. Pay him. Don't argue with him. Pay him. Give him what he wants. Like Liverpool fans are begging like FSG, just pay the man. Give him what he wants. And you know what? They're right. Give him what he wants. He's phenomenal. He's the best Liverpool player this century. Sorry, Stephen. It's true. He's the best Liverpool player this century I've seen anyway. And then, I mean, I don't know how you rank him against the greats because football's changed so much since the 80s, since Liverpool's dominant era. And Liverpool have got so many amazing dominant players like from that era. I don't think you can really compare because football's too different now. But in terms of the 21st century, like I'd stack Salah up against any of them, any of their players. He's just outrageous. What he can do, what he has done, the consistency with which he's done it, the speed which he scored the goal, I think, was it fastest 100 goals or second fastest or something? I can't remember. Just the speed of which he's done everything, the way he settled in immediately, the way he is the embodiment of Klopp. He just is. He's always there to rescue them. Like, he's always there to just sort of pull it out of the bag for Liverpool, to drag them to the forefront, to score the crucial goals for them. And right now, this season, he's just been outrageous. Come on, it's Mohamed Salah. Left wing, if we move on to the wing, just do the wings and then we'll do striker later. Left wing, Heung-min Son. Heung-min Son is, I mean, similarly, he's been really, really good. He's not got the production. He's only scored two goals. But if you look, and two goals, one assist. But if you look at those two goals, one assist, they've been all very crucial to Spurs getting points. And Spurs haven't got very many points. And Spurs have been kind of rubbish apart from him. Like the Harry Kane, the big transfer saga, you're thinking, yeah, you know, is he going to go? Is he going to stay? They ended up keeping him, which is a huge mistake for my money because he didn't want to be there. He doesn't want to be there. It's obvious watching him play, he doesn't want to be there. Son does want to be there. Son wants to be at Spurs. And Son has been carrying that team, especially those first three games before Kane even came back. He was the one dragging them. They got the 3-0 start. They won all three of their games. Son was basically the reason they won those games. They weren't 0-0. Since then, they've struggled a bit more. But Son, again, is stepping up and delivering for them. Whenever anyone needs someone to do something, Son steps up and does something. And I think that has to be rewarded. I mean, obviously, Mane's played well. Grealish has been very good. And I mentioned him earlier, Demario Gray, I think, has been excellent for Everton. But just the fact that Son is doing it through such adversity, I think, for me, puts Son ahead. So Salah and Son are my wingers.
Okay, we'll save the big one until the end. So we'll flick this one across to Tom for right attacking and left attacking, Salah and Son. Would you agree?
Yeah, Salah's short and sweet. I can't allow any form of an argument for not getting him. And it's obviously formation's key here. We've alluded to Mane as well. 99 Premier League goals, none of them penalties. He's maybe in terms of that Liverpool, you know, arguably my favourite personally, but you can't deny. So, but for me, Phil Foden's got to be in there somewhere. And I know recency bias, but if we look at that performance of Anfield, of such a youngster, and the big games as well, largely these elite players get judged, don't they? And, you know, there's a bit similar alongside Bernardo Silva, just two standout players. But because he's English, we have a bit more of affinity to him. But just the youth and just He just takes the ball. He always wants the ball. He always wants to go past people, and he always wants to create for someone else. And I think maybe injury, and he's not played as much as others, so the stats is maybe not there as regards to direct goals and assists, which were the most obvious things. But for me, there is no more exciting English player in the Premier League right now than Phil Foden. So I'd probably look to get him at the expense of Son, who rightfully is dragging Spurs by the horns, because obviously Kane's certainly not doing his part. But for me, I think Phil Foden needs to be in there.
Okay, right, the big one, the number nine. So we've got two votes for Salah. I'm going to go for Salah as well. I'm going to give the rest of mine at the end. So Mo, you're in. Not you, Mo Salah. Wide left. We'll leave that one for a minute. One vote for Son, one vote for Foden. Through the middle, Mo, give us your shout. Central striker, goal machine, gun. Who are you going for?
Jamie Vardy. Top scorer in the Premier League, 6 goals. Need I say more? I mean, Lukaku's been very good, very, very good. Cristiano Ronaldo's been effective. Kind of cannibalised Man United's whole attacking structure and killed Mason Greenwood's burgeoning career-defining season. But he scored goals, I guess, so good for him. Jamie Vardy was, I wrote him off at the start of the season. I was like, yeah, he's old now. Patson Daka's going to take his spot. Jamie Vardy's like, nah, mate, not yet. Hang on. Now, don't get me wrong. This is very much, like I said, this is about what's going on right now. And I don't think, if you ask us this again in December, in March, Jamie Vardy probably won't be on this list, because Jamie Vardy, the last few seasons, has been very, very good. First half of the season, after Christmas, slows down because he's 30 million years old, whatever he is, right? But right now, he's white hot. He's incredible. His movement in behind, Leicester aren't even really playing well, and he's just scoring these goals and like keeping them alive. Like right now, they're really struggling to juggle Europe and domestic competitions, and they've got injuries, and they've really struggled without Fofana. And it's like, what are you doing here? Rodgers is a bit sort of all over the shop, but Vardy's like, it's all right, boss, I got you, and he's just showing up scoring goals. I mean, what more can you ask from a striker? He's scoring goals consistently, better than anyone else. It's Vardy, well done.
Tom, stone cold logic from Mo, following the numbers, top goal scorer in the Premier League as it stands. Jamie Vardy, is he your pick or are you going for somebody else?
Yeah, I am going for somebody else. But that's the thing, when I saw Mo's piece, I was sort of like, when you see Jamie Vardy, despite all he's done, that Leicester title winning campaign, the story from you still sort of have question marks about him, don't you? But when you boil down to the hot cast iron facts that at the moment he is the best striker in the Premier League. And I think that's maybe where it's just personal preference, I get you, because obviously Vardy's going to do what Ronaldo doesn't he? In fact, he'll score goals, but he'll run your channels. He'll be sticking fingers up to away fans, all that sort of added bonus to him. But always for me, if it comes down to a striker, who do I want the ball to fall anywhere in and around the penalty area? It has to be for me, for Cristiano Ronaldo. So that is quite interesting. I can't deny the account that's been rightfully put forward for Jamie Vardy. But still, for me, even on current form at the moment, I know he scored a load of goals in our international break against weaker teams, but still, in the Premier League, if there's a chance within, in and around that penalty area, I want Cristiano swinging his right foot out.
One final thing about Vardy, though, just to really blow everyone's mind. Leicester have scored 9 goals this season. He scored 6 of them. He scored 66.9% of Leicester's goals this season.
Yeah.
I mean, like without him, they'd be in the relegation zone. It's not an exaggeration. But anyway.
The numbers are kind of the deciding factor for me here, because I am kind of torn, and I'm torn between somebody that I think, Mo, you mentioned, but didn't get into either of your teams, and that's Mikel Antonio. And I think what I've tried to look at this in terms of deadliness in front of goal, Vardy does just about edge him in terms of goal conversion, 35% based on shots on target so far this season for Vardy. Mikel Antonio's is 29, which would say that Vardy's output is a little bit higher. Could I maybe tweak my team and move Vardy out wide and put Antonio through the middle? But then that wouldn't go with the kind of nature of formations. So I think I'm going to go for... Yeah, Mo, I'm going to go with your picks. I'm going to go with Son on the left and Vardy through the middle. And I think the tough one for me is not necessarily Son. I think Son's been excellent. I think particularly Spurs, is everything that's been good about Spurs going forward this season has been about Son Heung-min. When there's been so much attention on Harry Kane, is he staying at Tottenham? Is he leaving? What is going to happen next? And Nuno has come into the club brand new, very, very unsteady, unstable circumstances. Son has been his guy. That those 3-0 wins at the start of the season, it was Son, Son, Son. They've hit a little bit of a sticky patch going into the international break, but they needed that result against Villa last time out. It was him, again, who was at the forefront of it. There's so much swirling around Tottenham Hotspur Football Club at the moment. And the only person that is consistently banging in goals and turning in performances is Song Heung-min. And then through the middle, as I say, it's incredibly, incredibly tight between Antonio and Vardy. The only reason I'd possibly tip for Vardy is maybe that extra little bit of efficiency in front of goal and the points that his goals have won Leicester so far this season, because measured against it, there's been a few gloss goals that Antonio has scored for West Ham this season where they might have already won or already picked up a point, but Leicester haven't been great, and when they've needed somebody, it's the oldest gunslinger in town that's banged in the goal. So I'm going to go with Vardy as well. Gents, I'm actually shocked by the amount of agreement that we've had on the podcast. Tom, you're brand new to the Squawker Talker podcast, so let me tell you, this does not happen very, very often that we wrap up a podcast on this point of agreement. So I'm going to quit while I'm ahead, while we're all ahead, and call it there for the Squawker Talker podcast. Tom, thanks so much for your time.
Thanks for having me.
Great stuff. We'll definitely have you on again soon, and particularly if we're all going to be getting on and rosy in the garden. Mo, do you promise to be nice next time if Tom's on and not be arguing with people?
I love it. It's great. Everyone's friendly. We're having a great time. I might just start fighting next time, just for fun, you know, just like stop picking a fight with him. What are you saying? You're just like randomly just oppose whatever he says. The sky is not blue, Tom. The sky is green. You know, just like randomly start arguments just for the sake of it. But no, it's been great. It's been great. It's been good pod. Lots of agreement. I was quite pleased. I thought you guys would tear my article to shreds, to be honest. But you know, it's been good. Good stuff.
Brilliant stuff. There's definitely going to be some disagreement next week, because the focus of next week's Squawker Talker podcast is Newcastle United. We are going to be taking a look into the St. James's Park crystal ball and predicting what is coming down the line. But that's it for today's episode of the podcast. Thanks so much for listening. Don't forget, if you're a regular fan or if you're a brand new listener, if you click subscribe on this episode, you can get a brand new one as soon as it is ready every single week. Thanks so much for listening, and we'll see you again very, very soon.
Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $150 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $150 into something bigger when you bet on Moneyline, Spread, Totals, Player Props.
$150 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5. I know where I'm going to bet from now on. Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In app only.
Planet Fitness has everything you need to start strong, so you can give everything you've got. From plate-loaded strength equipment and functional training areas to treadmills, stair climbers, and free weights. Our equipment is best in class, and our clubs are right around the corner, so you can make this your strongest year yet. Join the club today and save $28 or more when you join for $1 down, $15 a month. Cancel anytime. Deal ends Friday, January 9th. Are you coming? Planet Fitness. We're all strong on this planet. See club for details.